This is Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
Welcome back to another edition of the MMA Report Podcast. We are presented by HelloFresh. Come up here later on in the show. Going to tell you about how you can get 12 free meals, including free shipping from HelloFresh. But of course, this episode is mainly going to be looking back at what happened last week in mixed martial arts as we had the PFL fourth event of 2021. We had Bellator 260 and also UFC 263. Plus, we'll look ahead to this week's MMA action. On Thursday night, we got PFL number 5. And then on Saturday, we have UFC Vegas number 29, which, of course, we headlined by Chan Sung Jung versus Dan Ige. The PFL card slated to be headlined by Rory McDonald taking on Gleison Tibau. Daniel, it's a late here Wednesday afternoon here on June the 16th. I've taken the past couple of days off. I've definitely partaken in some beverage and some nice relaxation. What's been going on with you, man?
Man, not a whole lot. Just catching back up on all the action. You know, I've been able to catch everything the day after it airs, and it's been fun, man. It's been a lot of content to take in, but, you know, just the grind. As usual, but man, we had a lot of mixed martial arts content to take in, including the latest episode of The Ultimate Fighter. I'm still 3 episodes strong. I haven't stopped watching. Is the show boring? Absolutely. But you know what? Just in general, it was a great weekend of mixed martial arts, man. There were so many great moments to talk about here today.
I have not watched episode 3 yet. I have watched the first 2 episodes. You know, because of knowing some of the fighters on the show, I think it's probably going to keep me tuned in. But yeah, you're right. It's the same old Ultimate Fighter. I mean, what we've seen the last 29 seasons is what we're getting here. But of course, you know, last week I took in all of this MMA action live from the PFL. I didn't watch all the PFL live, watched most of it after I got done with my show with Awesome. Then, of course, Bellator and then the UFC. I want to start off with the UFC because I definitely do want to talk a lot about Clarissa Shields. But, you know, when it comes to the main event, first off, overall, I thought UFC 263 delivered. It gave us those great moments in sports that we're looking for in terms of Bram Moreno. You just see how big of a star Nate Diaz is. But when I look at the main event, I mean, look, it was I don't know if I want to say a masterful performance by Israel Adesanya because, you know, Vittori did have a moment in the fight when he got on the back, but that moment just did not last very long. But my 3 takeaways from the main event are all related to Marvin Vettori. And I think that, and I was thinking about this earlier today, is like I should be crediting Israel Adesanya more than what I was kind of thinking about in my head. But my 3 takeaways from Marvin Vettori are this. It was early on in the second round, I just noticed his mouth wide open. I'm like, oh, that's not a good sign. You're in the second round of a 5-round fight and you're breathing through your mouth. That's not a good situation. The second thing is, man, the brutal honesty of Marvin Vettori's corner as he's coming back after every round and Rafael's like, you lost that one. You lost that one. You lost that one, which kind of makes it all comical of him questioning the scorecards, which is like your corner was telling you, which kind of told me he wasn't listening to his corner. And my 3rd takeaway, and it's probably the biggest takeaway, is the lack of in-fight adjustments by Marvin Vettori, because the Marvin Vettori we saw in the first round was the same Marvin Vettori we saw in the 5th round. I think just really showed just the inability to make adjustments on the fly.
Yeah, and it was a version of himself that was much more tired. You know, as that fight went on, Adesanya kind of created a bigger and bigger gap, and that's a really good sign for Israel that he performed so well in rounds 4 and 5. That's a nice little adjustment from the last time we saw Adesanya in the cage. Totally agree with you. I mean, I think Marvin's best round absolutely was round 1. That's the round you would probably give to him. And he did have some moments. You mentioned, you know, when he was going for the rear naked choke, and that was a significant moment. But by and large, Adesanya dominated this fight. You're right. There wasn't really much of an adjustment for Marvin Vettori, and there really should have been. His game plan was not working, and he continued to implement it, and it didn't work because he started losing the cardio battle, as well as the fact that his leg was in rough shape due to the damage from Adesanya's leg kick. So from Israel, What you really got to be impressed by is the ability to get the fight back up to the feet or the ability to shuck off the wrestling. You know, there were plenty of moments when he did get taken down, but not enough to lose this fight. So I thought Adesanya really rebounded really well. And for Marvin Vettori, even though the first fight was very close, this fight had a close first round, he now finds himself with a long road back to challenging for the middleweight championship again. So, you know, he brought the pace, but this time it didn't pay off. And I think your analysis is spot on in that he couldn't have asked for a more honest corner. Clearly, he didn't listen to them.
That was the biggest thing, is that he clearly did not listen to what his corner was telling him. And, you know, I mean, look, if you're Marvin Vettori at this point, you're the biggest Robert Whittaker fan in the world. And that fight, it sounds like Izzy wants that fight in October. He really wants to do that thing in New Zealand. I just don't know. And Dana White was asked about that after the fight was over. And Dana kind of is like, I don't know if we're going to be able to accomplish that one off. Because I think when you look at COVID protocols, and New Zealand's protocols are probably the toughest there is out there. You know, we've seen it with Dan Hooker and some other fighters. But to me, like, it's obviously Whittaker is the matchup to make. Vettori, he's already called for Paulo Costa. You know, Paulo Costa, you know, he has his issues right now with the UFC. But, like, to me, it's like, you're Vettori. You're the biggest Robert Whittaker fan. And look, I can't wait to see Whittaker and Adesanya just to see how can Robert Whittaker make the adjustments that he was, you know, obviously the first fight didn't last very long, but can he make those adjustments to potentially dethrone Izzy?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a great fight, man. And I haven't really put the thought into it, but I can absolutely be persuaded to go either way. And if you have a fight like that with a champion like Adesanya, who has been so dominant, you got to absolutely book it. So I'm hyped for Izzy and Whittaker. This is a great sign for Israel Adesanya. Whenever you have a high profile loss, it's very hard to bounce back. He's done just that. He has improved, which is a very difficult thing to do when you have the success and all the limelight and whatnot. Usually you reach your peak when you win the championship and you start going down. We saw that dip from Adesanya, but he's back on top. So I'm very excited for the legacy Israel Adesanya's building. Again, he has the tools to be an all-time great. He's already one of the top two middleweight champions to ever hold the strap. It's him and Anderson Silva. That's the list for top middleweight champions in the history of the sport. Getting through Whittaker would absolutely help his case. And once you get past Whittaker, you take a long look at that middleweight division, and there really isn't anyone on the horizon I would point to as a possible guy who could take the championship away from Adesanya.
I think the one fight, and it's a question of whether this fighter can get to that point, that it would be an interesting matchup, and I think that's Darren Till.
Yeah, I think the stand-up would be phenomenal. I mean, that's a great fight to bring up, actually, because it would force Adesanya possibly to show a different hand than we normally see. I mean, he's normally the best stand-up fighter in the cage. You put those two in the cage, it's not entirely clear who is, but I think Till would make his night difficult. I mean, Whittaker's going to make his night difficult on the feet, but I think Adesanya clearly has the edge there in that fight. In the Till fight, it definitely gets a little more close, especially with the way in which Till fights. And I think for him, if he withstands the leg kicks, he'll be all right. But man, the nastiness of Israel's leg kicks is just a nice little cherry on the top of the striking display that he does with his hands, man.
Of course, UFC 63 also had that feel-good sports moment, that moment where we see someone do something great. You know, like last night, I'm sitting there watching the Brooklyn Nets, and I'm still in amazement of what Kevin Durant was able to do there in the second half. The fact that he played every single minute of that game is another thing. But Bram Moreno, just that, you know, you saw it on Thursday during the pre-fight press conference, and to me of that, it was kind of a perfect scenario for the UFC. They put Bram Moreno in the right market where he was going to succeed. And Dana White kind of talked about that after the fact of, you know, you got to know sometimes the market, you know, he goes, there's some fighters you can take anywhere, but there's some fighters, the market really is where, you know, it brings them out. And you saw from the press conference to his walkout, and then towards the end, the mural that got put up in Tijuana on Sunday morning, just an amazing, I found the graphic artist who did it, his Instagram is just amazing. Actually, he had a mural that he had previously already done a Bram Moreno in Tijuana. And then 3 days before the event, he put it out there that he was going to put one up when Bram Moreno became the champion. But just unbelievable performance. But I do think the time has come. Davison Figueiredo, move up to 135 pounds, man.
Yeah. I think the weight cut is just too difficult. And this wasn't a close fight. This was a dominant performance for Brandon Moreno. So it'll be very interesting what Figueiredo looks like at 135. I think you made the right call there. I'm very surprised by this result. I'm very surprised by this fight. I mean, again, in round one, Moreno's stand-up was on point. He took it to Davison Figueiredo, and I thought he was going to get hit, and he was going to get hit hard. I was completely wrong. Brandon Moreno, man, he looked on another level. This was an all-time flyweight performance for him. This was the peak of his career. He performed great. It'll be interesting to see what he does with the championship. But damn, stand-up looked on point. Then the grappling comes into play, and that's where he ultimately gets the fight-ending submission in the third round. I just thought Brandon looked phenomenal, man. He was a guy who was released by the UFC. Obviously, it wasn't because he was a bad flyweight. It's probably because they thought they were going to, you know, retire the division. And here he finds himself with the championship of a division that is very much alive. And it was a magical post-fight interview star-making performance. When you think of the list of greatest post-fight interviews, Brandon Moreno's post-fight interview has to be a part of it. Majority of the people don't even know what he said during it. It was mostly all in Spanish. But the sheer emotion of it was just amazing. It reminded me whenever Rose had one of her great post-fight interviews. But this one was just... the emotion transcended language, and with the crowd being as loud as it is, having come off the pandemic where we had no crowds, it was just, it's an all-time UFC moment, and it's a division that we didn't think we would be talking about in 2021, and we are. So congratulations to Brandon Moreno. I think he has real star potential, just a matter of putting him in intriguing matchups, but... you know, the biggest loser is probably Cain Velasquez, because beforehand they were pretending like he was the first ever Mexican heavyweight champion, the first ever Mexican UFC champion, and now they're going to be like, now Brandon Moreno, the first ever Mexican-born UFC champion. So now he'll get that honor. And it's insane that it took this long in the history of this promotion to have someone born in Mexico to become UFC champion. But damn, what a beautiful moment from Brandon Moreno.
Oh, you know, Dana White's thinking, God, would I love to go to Mexico City right now with Bram Moreno in the main event. You know he is thinking about that, going, God, if Mexico City can open up and they let me do 100% capacity, that would be Dana White's wet dream right now with Bram Moreno.
That would be, man, I have real questions about Dana White's dreams. That's what he's thinking about. But I tell you what, I do think... having a star in Mexico has had to have been a fantasy of his for a long time. I mean, they wanted to force Roger Huerta. You know, if you're of Hispanic descent, born in America, they wanted to force you in that peg in that square hole. Well, this is a square peg and it fits perfectly. So you're totally right. And it would be great to have that happen in a weight class where there really is a history of lack of star power. And to have the country be the defining trait of a fighter is possibly one way you can turn a flyweight champion into a money draw. There's no guarantee it's going to happen. I would actually expect it not to happen, largely due to the fact that I don't know how many dramatic flyweight matchups we have, but the strategy is there. You can employ the nationality, the fact that he's the first ever UFC Mexican champion, to possibly really make this flyweight champion a draw for you. So I'm very excited to see what happens, man. I mean, who do you think would be the first guy to challenge for that title?
I think they want to go Figueiredo if he wants to go 125. I know I saw on Twitter earlier today, Jason House, who is Bram Moreno's manager. It's actually the first UFC champion for Jason House. Kind of mentioned that they're even open to Cody Garbrandt coming down to 125, even though I'm in this boat of, I want to see Cody make 125 and Cody get a win at 125 before he should be in line for a title shot.
Yeah, I mean, Cody's got the name value, but there's no reason he should be competing for UFC championship. I mean, the resume just isn't there.
Yeah.
You know, he's got so few wins.
By the way, so for 24 minutes, it was dominations by Leon Edwards. But that last, that minute 24, I'm on my couch. I'm like, oh shit, he's going to do it. He's going to knock him out. I think I probably had the reaction as most people on their couch going, holy crap, Nate is going to pull this thing off. Because if he would have pulled that off, dude, the roof would have gone off there in Glendale.
Dude, it was already going off in Glendale. I mean, I was watching some videos from the fans as the finish of that fight was happening. And I was like, wow, I had like goosebumps, man. I mean, that was crazy. You got to feel bad for Leon Edwards, right? This dude dominates for 24 minutes. And the story of the fight is the 1 minute that he didn't, but he got rocked bad. But, and it's, dude, Leon's like the, so unlucky, bro. Like, so unlucky. You look at the Muhammad. You look at the whole pandemic situation. You look at the Muhammad fight. You look at this fight, which he dominated for 24 minutes. He was in very much control. And you're like, did he just lose a title opportunity based on 1 minute? I mean, we got to give Edwards a title fight right after this next scrap. Like he can't be fighting Jorge Masvidal. Like, for the love of God, this guy hasn't lost in 10 fights.
Okay, all right. Let me, if you are Leon Edwards, what do you want? I know what the answer is to me. To me, the answer is give me Jorge Masvidal, because that's going to put the most money in my bank account.
Oh, man. I mean, yes. Well,
you know I'm right. You know, you can just say, Jason, you're right.
You might be right, but the thing is, Masvidal versus Edwards isn't a big fight. Like because of Edwards. Like Edwards isn't a star. And, you know, Gamebred's going to bring more attention, and Gamebred versus Edwards probably does more pay-per-views than Usman versus Edwards. Does it do more pay-per-views than Covington versus Edwards? I don't know. It'd probably be similar. But I think Leon just isn't really, like, from a star power thing, isn't elevating Masvidal to the same level as, you know, Masvidal Diaz. So, yeah, the Gamebred fight is going to be a championship fight when it comes to, you're going to get a championship level paycheck theoretically. But damn, like, I feel for the dude. Like, 10 fights, he hasn't lost. He's been waiting so dang long in a sport where you peak for such a short period of time. I just, if I'm Edwards, if I don't want the championship, that almost devalues the title. But, you know, it doesn't matter what belt you have. It matters what's in your bank account. So you bring up a great point that the Masvidal fight is attractive. It's just, gosh, I would feel so bad for him if he goes his entire career without challenging for a championship fight. And that's a Masvidal fight. Isn't really that bad of a matchup for him, but Masvidal's still pretty darn good. Like, I think Leon would beat him, as he showed, but he also showed he can get rocked.
I want to mention this tweet that I saw earlier this week, and it came from a reporter from BT Sport. I hope I pronounced his last name correctly, Adam Catterall. He said, quote, like it or not, when making UFC title fights, although a factor, the most important question isn't whether it's been earned, it's whether it will sell. Leon has earned, Colby will sell.
Yep. It's as simple as that, man. It's as simple as that. The difference in buy rate is big. It's a big gap. It's a lot of money. And this is a business. But even if he has to wait behind Covington, he deserves a shot, man. I mean, I feel bad for him. Like again, like the amount of ladders this dude must have walked under is astronomical. Like, when we're looking at, like, all-time unluckiest runs in the UFC while still being successful, Edwards takes the cake, and it's not close in my opinion.
If I am Kamaru Usman, this is what I'm proposing. Okay, we'll do the Colby fight. However, I want the co-main event to be Leon Edwards, Jorge Masvidal, as a backup plan. If Colby doesn't make it the fight night, you've got Leon already on the card. And then B, it also puts Jorge Masvidal on the pay-per-view to help out on the back end for Kamaru Usman.
Hell yeah. I would even ask for like a Diaz fight on there to throw it in the cake, you know?
Like this is my thing. Like, and this is like, you look at the Jorge, like, I can make the case. The two biggest money fights the UFC can make and realistically could make in 2021 have no title on the line. Jorge Masvidal versus Nick Diaz, Nate Diaz versus Conor McGregor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with you. The only fight that would put that in contention is a fight that they don't want to pay for, and that's Jones and Ngannou. Those three fights are the quote-unquote realistic super fights we could see. So you know, it's great to have guys who aren't champions be big draws for you. The biggest issue for the UFC for like the past 5 years is that your champions aren't draws, right? And the thing is, I think what really helped their business become successful is having the championship made you a draw, in my opinion. The championship meant so much that if you had the strap and you defended it several times, you became an attraction. Not so much the case now, but at the end of the day, they still have plenty of stars, which is good enough for them. But they do need to fortify that future. They do need to build that next group of stars. And I don't necessarily know if they have them quite yet. They're coming slowly but surely. But yeah, it's like we're running it back with the old welterweights that would draw. But it's like the Nick Diaz brothers are not walking through that door every single year for the next 5 years, you know. But yeah, you're totally right. You're totally spot on. Those welterweight matchups are grossly are way more interesting than any Usman fight, even the Usman Covington one.
Look, it just goes back to, at the end of the day, the UFC is about promoting three letters. They're not about promoting fighters. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. By the way, if you're going to go back and watch anyone fight from UFC 263, to me, it's not a doubt in my mind. It is Brad Riddell, Drew Dober. That is the one fight to me. If you're going to go back and watch a fight, I don't know if you saw the tweet that was out there yesterday, or maybe it was on Monday, where before the main event, Izzy goes back to basically give props to Drew Dober, you know, for his fight against his teammate. I thought that was a really cool moment. I mean, there's a lot of crazy, weird things we see on social media. That was a really cool moment we saw.
Oh, yeah, it was an amazing moment. Dober lost the fight, but it was a fight where no one lost, bro. Like, it was really close. It could have gone either way. And it was the best fight of the whole weekend. On a weekend that saw three events, it was a great way to cap off the prelims. It's a great way to send people to the pay-per-view. Phenomenal lightweight fight. Both of those guys got to be proud of themselves. I mean, when you think about what else sticks out, if there's another fight you want to watch, maybe you can watch Terrence McKinney, Matt Favola, just because it will only take you 7 seconds. I mean, dude just goes in there, hits him with the left, and puts him away. And then, like, in terms of other stuff that is notable, I mean, you know, Lauren Murphy got a win, and at some point she's got to get a title fight. Paul Craig broke Jamal Hill's arm. It was gross and disgusting. And somehow the fight didn't end at that moment. It still went on a little longer before they realized that this was a broken arm. Crazy, crazy performance out of Paul Craig. And then, you know, Bilal Muhammad clearly beats Damian Maia. And at this point, it's like, all right, it might be time for Maia to, you know, call things a career.
So here's a crazy thing about the sport, as Jamal Hill is a dislocated arm. And this just says something about mixed martial arts. You know, guy dislocates his arm, then the two guys are partying together in the club after.
Which is crazy, because there was like some trash talk between these two. This was a steamy fight, pre-fight, but I mean, that's the way it goes, man. You know, even if you're brothers before a fight, you got to get in that mode. And yeah, that's hilarious that he was out in the club.
Did you see the fact of they're awarding Paul Craig his black belt and Jamal Hill is literally sitting next to him in the club?
That's phenomenal. No, I didn't see that. That is, yeah. I mean, you know, you got to drink a lot if you're Jamal Hill, if you dislocate your arm, man, to take the pain away. Because I feel like that's one rough hangover. You wake up with a headache and an arm ache.
Yeah, that's not a great night. I mean, because it was supposed to be kind of the rise of Jamal Hill in this division, and that just did not take place. I mean, look, it's one of those moments we see in the sport that you sit back and go, man, that's a little bit of a cool moment. Before we get into everything else that happened last week in MMA, do want to let you know about our presenting sponsor this week, and that is HelloFresh. You can enjoy a wide variety of easy, delicious options for all three meals a day, plus every snack and special treat in between with the HelloFresh Market. They offer the flexibility you need to easily customize your order and app within minutes, easily change your delivery date, food preferences, plan size, or skip a week whenever you need. I need to skip a week this week because I was out of town, so skip the week, and then was on the app last night figuring out what we want to get delivered next week. And fellas, I'm telling you, it is super easy to make. Look, I am not a whiz in the kitchen. I'll be the first one to say it, but I did make their lemon thyme pork earlier late last week, and man, it was absolutely delicious.
Yes, it is so tasty, man. It makes me feel great to get on with the day. And what I really love about HelloFresh is, you know, I think we're all busy, but I am too, especially working the morning shift. And it's just perfect, especially with the breakfast on the go. But it's perfect for my lifestyle because I want to do so many things. And HelloFresh provides these meals that I can prepare quickly, and they just taste great. They have quick and easy meals. I'm talking about dinners that take 15 to 20 minutes. Breakfast on the go, as I mentioned, these are easy options, perfect for your busy lifestyle. And the thing is, it just cuts out the stress in like a meal planning and grocery store trips. You can just enjoy the cooking, get the dinner on the table, impress a lady friend if you have one coming over in just about 30 minutes. You can enjoy just a wide variety of easy and delicious options for all three meals of the day, plus every snack and special treat in between within the HelloFresh market. I gotta talk to you about this too. You are getting better value with HelloFresh. I'm talking about your pocketbook. HelloFresh is 28% cheaper than shopping at your local grocery store. And Jason, check this out. They're 72% cheaper than a restaurant meal without sacrificing the quality. That's from the Zagat Dining Survey. 72% cheaper, Jason. That's insane.
Yes, and go to HelloFresh.com/MMAReport12. Use code MMAReport12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/MMAReport. And use code MMAReport12 for 12 free meals. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. It is, I will tell you, man, it is some unbelievable food that we've had. And, man, that thyme pork that we had the other day was absolutely amazing. Now, what was amazing was the performance by Yaroslav Amosov in the main event of Bellator 260. But, damn, I mean, just kind of like the main event of UFC 263, to me, it's more about the fighter on the losing side of the fight more than about what the fighter on the winning side of it. To me, this is not back-to-back fights in a row where Douglas Lima just hasn't put together combinations.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to put together combinations when you're on your back, but when they did play out on the feet, he wasn't bringing anything to the table, man. This was nearly a clean sweep on the scorecards for Yaroslav Amosov, and Douglas Lima, who's a part of the Mount Rushmore Bellator, did not look like one of the guys who belongs there. He certainly does. This was a bad performance. This was a dominant performance for Amosov. Shout out to him for becoming the welterweight champion. But for Douglas Lima, I mean, it's back to the drawing board. But the thing is, when you get back to that board, there's nothing in this fight that got me excited about his potential to get back his championship, man. I mean, this was a close fight on paper. And Amosov, whenever he takes on Lima again, and you know he will, I don't know how he doesn't come out as just a big-time favorite. And not only that, man, I don't know who in this division is going to beat him. Amosov went out and took the title from Douglas Lima, and he just completely put away and dominated one of the best welterweights in Bellator history.
Let me just say this. I get, you know, Michael Page is the fancy next title challenge everyone's looking at. But to me, Jason Jackson deserves the next title shot. I mean, look, and we can talk about, you know, deserve and who brings the most attention to it. But I look at the resumes, and to me, Jason Jackson's got the better resume. Michael Page, I'm like, bro, can you fight a top five guy?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Michael Page fight Douglas Lima at this point. I mean, look, if you're Michael Page, I don't know if you want to fight Amosov. I mean, he's just going to put you on your back. By the way, Michael Page did a pretty good job on the broadcast.
No. Did you kind of notice once that fight was over? He wasn't exactly claiming up all that microphone. Give me the title shot, man. Give me the title shot. He had his head going, oh, crap, man. I'm going to have to go through like 6 months of wrestling practice.
Yeah, dude, that's not going to be enough, man. This dude's at a different level. I mean, it's scary. Like, he's going to hold on the title for a while. You know, Jason Jackson's scrappy. He might turn that one interesting. And, you know, he was pretty good against Paul Daly. Man, I really loved his walkout. He was just singing the song, the Jamaican song. I don't know. I'm pretty sure it was something famous. I'm just not very well known on music. But I was entranced by watching his walkout. I'm like, he is putting so much energy into this entrance. I'm rooting for Jason Jackson, man. And the fight was solid. It was kind of boring, but Jackson Amosov is probably what they're going to go to next. And I think a big reason why is because, as you mentioned, Michael Page probably won't be running for that opportunity, because who the hell would want to? So Lima Page, bro, sign that fight. I want to see those two guys stand up and strike, because Amosov is kind of a wet blanket that's just going to give you the big L on your championship opportunity, and it's going to be a boring fight.
Yeah, that fight makes a lot of sense. By the way, speaking of Bellator, earlier today, they did announce that they are going to L.A. for Patricio Pitbull versus AJ McKee. It's going to be Bellator 263. July the 31st. That'll be a Saturday night. Now, what really stuck out to me about this in the press release, Daniel, is the fact of they announced three additional fights for that card and all labeled them as fights on the prelims. Emmanuel Sanchez versus Mads Burnell, Magomed Magomedov versus Rafael Stouts, and Usman Nurmagomedov versus Manny Moro. Okay, the Nurmagomedov Moro fight being on the prelims, not a shock. But then when I saw that Sanchez is on the prelims, like, ooh, I'm guessing that probably leads to that Bellator's clearly got some big plans for that fight card at the end of July.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, I mean, yeah, the Usman fight, that makes sense. The Sanchez fight, I mean, like, you look at that division, I mean, he literally is what, like, the fourth or fifth best featherweight in that weight class at this point?
Third.
I mean,
third. Okay, third Bellator.
You would put him third behind McKee and Patricio? Yeah. Well, I don't know, man. I put Aaron Pico ahead of him now. You know, I'm kind of being sarcastic, but you know what? Aaron Pico looking good. So he might try. I mean, Aaron Pico might be a guy who finds himself on that main card. But I don't know. I mean, that's going to be a big-time main card.
So, I mean, look, it was a masterful performance by Aaron Pico. I mean, he looked absolutely amazing. And you look at the differences in Aaron Pico now under Jackson Wink to where he was at when, you know, he had trained a very little bit, a.k.a. was at Body Shop in California. You look at this moves, you know, out to Jackson Wink. He looks amazing. Mads Burnell was kind of somebody that I thought maybe that made sense, but you know what? It wouldn't surprise me. Maybe it's Aaron Pico, J.J. Wilson next.
Yeah, I think so, man. I think it's ready. He's ready, man. He really is. He's had a lot of pitfalls, but this was the best performance of his career because you saw an approach that you think is going to work long term. You saw him put it together in a way where it's like, this is the way this high-level wrestler who happens to be really good at striking should fight. He was wrestling and striking in just a nice, beautiful medley, which is not what we'd see out of him. And it just looked like Pico identified what separates him, and the switch was just a great camp switch, and it's paid off dividends. You know, I know, you know the thing is, Anthony is pretty damn good too, by the way. So it wasn't like a bad matchup, but he's ready for guys like J.J. Wilson. So I'm excited, man. Aaron Pico, He made me a believer in this performance.
He kind of noted in his post-fight media scrum that some top 10 guys had turned him down for this opportunity. So he's clearly a guy that, I mean, look, you know, whoever truly is to blame, and I don't think it was Bellator that tried to fast-track him. I think there was probably other people in his corner that were trying to fast-track everything. But, man, he looked unbelievable. But, you know, on Thursday night, it was all about the MMA debut of Carissa Shields. I'm watching it. And to me, it was interesting on how the MMA community reacted to it, because my reaction to the fight, and I think way some other people reacted to it, were just different. First off, the fact of my biggest takeaway from Carissa Shields is the composure and not panicking. How many people with her credentials get put on their back for that long are in straight panic mode? And you didn't see it. And my other thought was, like, I thought it really said a lot about Brittany Elkins and her jiu-jitsu level in terms of you've got someone who maybe has 6 months of grappling, if that, and she has her in awful positions and she couldn't finish the fight. Like, that to me was telling about it. I mean, look, there's no reason to rush Carissa Shields at this point. She's a long way to go. But I think my other big takeaway from it just shows of when we talk about martial arts disciplines, how low boxing is on how you want to develop a fighter.
Yeah, because being able to dictate where the fight plays out is the primary priority. It should be if you want to win a championship. And, you know, as soon as I read that article on ESPN about how she hadn't done MMA sparring since April, I was like, damn, this is not going to be good for Clarissa Shields. And then I like looked at Brittany Elkins' record. I'm like, all right, she'll probably still win. I mean, at the end of the day, Elkins 3-6 with zero submission wins. I don't care how much jiu-jitsu video you show me in the pre-fight thing. She's not a serious threat to be, you know, part of Abu Dhabi. So, you know, you're right to point out that Clarissa Shields really showcased great heart and great grit to be put on your back. It's a very embarrassing position for someone who's coming in as someone considered to be one of the best female boxers. To be so successful when you're in the sport, come in the main event, and to be put on your back in rounds one and two, that's got to be deflating. And I really can't think of an instance in which a boxer, a high-profile boxer, transitioned MMA, had that happen, and they won. I can't think of one instance, and we saw it here. So tip of the cap to Clarissa Shields. She showcased why she's one of the great competitors, and I just think it's pretty simple. If she's going to have a successful MMA career, she's got to put that time investment in the gym. And I know she's a gym rat, but she's really got to focus in on the grappling and wrestling aspect of it, because her grappling and wrestling was super below average. She ever goes up against a respectable, like, average level grappler or wrestler, she will lose and she will get tapped out in the first round. At the end of the day, she got dominated in rounds one and two. This was a recipe for disaster for the big contract that PFL awarded her. She went up against Brittany Elk and she lost two rounds. That's unacceptable. But she still prevailed. So it was a bad performance for Clarissa Shields, but on the bright side, it wasn't a complete disaster. She got the win. She should be proud of it. Now you got to invest the time and then the MMA sparring, the MMA training, the grappling, and the wrestling. The potential is there, but we are a long ways away from her being considered, you know, a possible, you know, person who could beat Kayla Harrison. And this is a long, long ways away.
Like, you think about when Kayla came in to mixed martial arts and what she looked like in her first fight in comparison to Chris Shields, it's two different planets.
Yeah, yeah. But it also brings up, it reinforces your initial point in that Kayla was really good in the ability to bring a fighter down to the ground. That brings it to her world. You know, Shields wasn't able to fight in her world. So we have these two fighters who maybe are novices in one aspect of the fight game. Kayla's ability to wrestle allows us to see her being an expert and not a novice. Clarissa wasn't able to show us her expertise. She was too worried about being put on her back. So it really reinforces the initial point of when it comes to what's the most important aspect of the sport to be an ace in to start. It's the part that involves taking the fight down to the ground.
I mean, but the one thing I also say is, like, when you listen to Clarissa Shields do interviews, you hear her post-fight interview in the cage, like, how can you not just fall in love with that as a promoter?
Yep. Yep, she's a star, man. She really is. She's got great heart, and she's very real. And it's hard not to, you know, root for her. And I totally agree with you. You know, speaking of people on this PFL card who stuck out, I thought the two featherweights start off the TV, the ESPN2 card, really stuck out personality-wise. I thought Brandon Lonane really stuck out as a really funny guy. You enjoy his post-fight interviews. You enjoy watching him drink a beer as he's watching Bubba Jenkins fight. And then, by the way, just a great fight between him and Tyler Diamond. Tyler Diamond is incredibly tough. Like, Lonane had through everything, including the kitchen sink at him, as they mentioned in the post-fight interview. And Tyler survived, and he even took it to him later. And Bubba has, like, it seems like Bubba Jenkins has seen a lot of pro wrestling and he's trying to be a pro wrestler, and I don't hate it. He really shows that personality. Then the fight starts and it's boring as hell. But Jenkins and Lonane, both really impressive personalities, and I think hopefully they are on opposite ends of the semifinals, because I think that is what PFL is building towards in terms of the featherweight championship fight.
Tyler Diamond, man, the toughness that he showed there. Now, of course, you know, there was a fight that we were supposed to have on that fight card, did not happen. So they had to make some adjustments. So next week, the final two fighters in the featherweight division will fight. That is Lance Palmer and Movleh Khabibov. Now this becomes very interesting. So three of the four spots in the playoffs have been locked up already. Brandon Laughlin, Chris Wade, Bubba Jenkins. Lance Palmer has 0 points. Right now, Shamon Moraes has the last spot with 5 points. So he has got to go out there and get a finish in the first or second round. I don't know how sure the tiebreakers play out. But Movleh Khabibov, all he's got to do is get a decision win. He's in the playoffs. Which makes me think, if you're Brandon Laughlin, and if it's 1 versus 4, who do you want to see? Unless you probably do not want to see Lance Palmer. That's probably the matchup you're not wanting to see at all. You're probably give me Shaymon Moraes, give me Movla Kobolev, because I feel those guys are going to keep the fight on the feet.
Yeah, I mean, he's already beaten Moraes, and but Moraes is pretty damn good. Like, Moraes might have learned and whatnot, but Lance is the guy you don't want to fight. Man, Lance is a lot of pressure, dude. I mean, he's never had pressure to finish the fight in the first round until now. This is the fight. It depends on how much he values winning this tournament, but if he values it, I mean, that's a lot of pressure. He needs to win in the first round. The last time he did it, it was the World Series of Fighting. The last time he won in the first round, it was against Chris Horodecki, June 2015. That was by submission. So, simply put, pressure's on. I don't think he's going to be able to do it. It's just really hard to finish a fight in the first round. Palmer hasn't shown an ability to do it. And it's going to be very interesting to see what his approach is and how much value he puts in it. And then on the other end, you got to think that they want to put Anthony Pettis in this tournament. And he really has an opportunity to do so. But I think he's also going to need to get a finish because, you have four guys with 3 points currently. And I think you have one guy who still needs a fight, right? Or two guys who still need a fight.
So on that card, you'll have Pettis versus Mafio, and that is the only lightweights are left. So it is, I mean, look, it's dramatic television. If you're the PFL, those two fights, a featherweight and lightweight fight, you put that on your main card because that is giving people a reason to watch. Because look, as I look at this PFL event tomorrow night, Daniel, What's drawing you to the television set?
I don't know.
The easy answer is Rory McDonald. That's the easy answer. But like, you look at last week, like it was okay. I'm getting to a television set because I want to see what Carissa Shields looks like in an MMA cage as opposed to what we've seen in the boxing ring. But as I look at this fight card, outside Rory McDonald, I mean, I guess you could throw Ray Cooper the third in there as well. There's not a ton of things that are drawing you to PFL on Thursday night. However, next week, you got the featherweight fight, you got the lightweight fight, plus you have Kayla Harrison.
Yeah, I think the week after, PFL 6 is where it's at. That's the big fight. This is going to take a dip. I mean, Donald Tebow was a great UFC fight night main event in 2009, 2007, but in 2021, not so much. But I'll watch. You know, the one fighter I'm most looking forward to seeing fight is Cesar Faria. Because he looked absurdly good in his initial fight against Nick Roerich. I mean, first off, body-wise, he looked like a mutant, which is his nickname, I think. His nickname is Mutante, which I'm assuming means mutant. He looked like a mutant. So the fighter who's bringing me to the television screen is Cesar Faria, because the 36-year-old looked really, really, really good in his debut, and I'm looking to see if he continues to follow up, and if he does, then he becomes a favorite to win this tournament. I mean, the other guy you got to look at is Antonio Carlos Jr., who took Tom Lawler to school last time out. He's taking on Vinny Magalhaes, and I think, you know, Magalhaes is going to put pressure on him to showcase a different side of his game. So, you know, I'm excited for some of these light heavyweight matchups, but it's definitely the calm before the storm. Between these three events, PFL 4, PFL 5, PFL 6, between the second half of the season, PFL 5 is definitely the low point.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, look, and for me, there's other options on the television set, from, you know, Lightning Islanders to the NBA. There's more options there. But I mean, look, if you're Glyson Tebow, you got to imagine he's going to try to take that one to the ground. But on Saturday night, we got UFC Vegas number 29. I was actually kind of surprised to see the main event is essentially a pick'em fight. Chan Sung Jung versus Dan Ige. I was watching the interview Brett Okamoto was doing with Dan Ige. First fight for Dan Ige since having a child. So his child's 2 months old, and he is, he's made it clear. He's like, look, I'm looking at this matchup as a way for me to propel myself into the top five. We saw what happened last year against Calvin Kattar, which it shows to me that if Dan Ige can get it done on Saturday night in Vegas, it just shows there's definitely a tier level at the UFC 145 pound division. We've got Volkanovski, Holloway, Ortega. They're one tier. Then it's kind of that next tier where it's Calvin Kattar, Khabib Nurmagomedov, if he's ultimately come back. And then we kind of get in that third tier where I feel like that's where Dan Ige fits in.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, he could absolutely vault himself up into that tier with the win here. at some point, Korean Zombie's like gonna be a human, I think. Like, he's been through so many wars, man. Like, he's battle test. I mean, he's been doing bangers since he took Leonard Garcia on. And I mean, that's like, it's just unbelievable. So at some point, a guy like that is going to, I just had to double check that I got the right fighter. I was like, wait, let me just double check. Cause that is kind of mind blowing that this is the same guy who fought Leonard Garcia in WEC. Cause that was literally 11 yeah. years ago. Yeah. And that was like a crazy fight. And yeah, so like at some point, the point I'm making is Korean Zombie at some point is going to look human. And he's going to look human whenever he takes on a damn good featherweight. He's taking on a damn good featherweight. I don't think he's going to look human against NDK. I think he's going to win this fight. But don't be surprised if he does. Ortega looked really good against him. So it could happen. I'm going with Korean Zombie. This is a great fight. This is also a one-fight card. Don't get me wrong. Matt Brown versus Diego Lima, that looks like a good time. But the whole fight card is just not doing much for me. Like, Chito Vera, David Grant, we'll watch. I'm excited. But by and large, this is a one-fight card. Like, when Alexei Oleinik's your co-main event, we got issues.
Yeah, I mean, this fight card did lose one fight of Tim Means and Danny Roberts off this one. Tim Means now going to fight a couple weeks later. An interesting quote from the Korean Zombie today was, he goes, quote, "I've been asking for a co-main event to do three rounds. They didn't give it to me. I was a little bit sad about that. There's also upside to being the main event. You get a lot more attention, a little bit more money and stuff like that. I definitely wanted to do a three rounder, but I mean, I think it comes down to is at some point, these wars are going to catch up to the Korean Zombie. First off, we don't even call him Chan Sung Jung anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just the Korean Zombie. Like,
yeah, I mean, he's been the Korean Zombie since the Garcia fight. But
it's a great opportunity for Dan Ige. I think if Dan Ige wins, it's likely a 25-minute battle for him. You got to imagine he's going to try to utilize his grappling this matchup, not make it a striking matchup. But yeah, you look at the rest of this card. Marlon Vera, Davy Grant, I was kind of surprised by that matchup. But you mentioned, yeah, when Alexei Oleinik versus Sergey Spivak is your co-main event, I think that it does kind of say something to you about that. But yeah, this is one of those cards. I'd be like, look, Chaos Williams, he's a fun guy to watch fight. I mean, there's some fighters on this card. I say, you know what? You look at what Junior Rosa has done since coming back to UFC. Okay, I'm down for that one. But there's just not, this is not one of those weeks in MMA that you're just like last week, you're like, I got to be glued to television. I got to watch all this MMA action. This week is one of those weeks where it's like, there's a couple fights, but it doesn't, like, you don't sit there and go, oh, I gotta invite the fellas over to watch some fights.
Yeah, I mean, the UFC's not putting on, the UFC's holding off until July 10th. I mean, between this fight night and the following one with Gane Volkov, it's not nothing too exciting, but then boom, Conor's back. You know, we got ourselves a fight. So it's holding off until we get that big time fight. And yeah, it's not too excited. But, you know, once that Conor fight happens, we got ourselves a great, you know, trio of back-to-back fights with the, you know, Conor and Pert McGregor, Holloway, Rodriguez, and Sanhagen Dillashaw.
Kind of crazy UFC doesn't have an event July 4th weekend.
Yeah, it is crazy. It's going to be a big gap between the Volkov fight and then the is anyone running July 4th weekend?
I don't think so. I'm just looking at the MMA Junkie schedule. You got a CFFC event in Philadelphia. That's all they have listed.
You know, by the way, man, while I was watching this Bellator broadcast, I'm like, geez, they don't have too many stars lined up. Like, when you're watching this Bellator card and you're like, keep updated on Bellator, check out our shows, headlined by Johnson versus Moldovsky and Velasquez versus Kielholz. Jason, I know these are some damn good fighters, but that's not drawing me to television shit.
It's not?
No, there's no one. Listen, you take a fan who doesn't watch Bellator too much, but they decided to tune in because they heard all the internet buzz about Yaroslav Amosov. You run that commercial a few times and you ask them, who are the fighters fighting those main events? They won't give you the right names. Yeah, these next two Bellator cards don't necessarily have that stake that's bringing me to the television set.
See, look, this is a thing for me. It's like, I just don't look ahead. It's like, you started mentioning about next week's UFC. I'm like, okay, who's on that car? I just don't pay attention. Like, I have not even looked at what is on Bellator 261.
Well, I just know the main events because they were.
Your co-main event is Liz Carmouche versus Conor Wannabe. That's a notable matchup there at 125 pounds. Daniel Vichel versus Keone Diggs, which is at 155. Christian Edwards versus Ben Parrish, which was supposed to be a fight a couple of weeks ago. And then Miles Jury, Sydney Outlaw. That's a notable matchup at 155 pounds. I'm just kind of looking through what I would consider. Yeah, that card doesn't have really any of their fights that really stick out to you. Let me look at Bellator 262 on what is on this card.
You don't have to look too long.
Because they only probably have one fight listed?
They have two fights, I think, on Wikipedia.
Soma and Marks is the other one listed.
Yeah. That's July 16th. But, I mean, yeah, they're setting the table for July 30th with the,
My thing about Bellator, I'm just interested to see now that they're going to be going to crowds here at the end of July of, do we go back to old school Bellator? Are the prelims are loaded up with ticket sellers?
I think it's going to be half and half. I think the roster size is pretty big that you can't, like, the roster size is going to be so big you got to put people on prelims, but the ticket sellers are going to come back. I mean, it's part of their business model. It's a part of their income. It's part of the yearly end of the year projections. We're going to get this much money off the ticket gate. One of the ways you get that is you book those guys on your prelims. So I think absolutely you'll see them there, but I think the prelims will be a lot better and they'll have most of the prelims I think they'll be broadcast to will be damn good fights, but those ticket sellers are coming back.
At the end of the day, you got to put butts in the seats, man.
Absolutely. That's a part of your business model. That's a part of the way you get the income and the revenue.
Yeah, it's just, I think that Bellator will probably do, I think they're just going to find the right ticket sellers. I don't think you're going to see them go back to the days where literally 3/4 of the preliminary card are just local fighters. I think those days are probably over, but I still think that you're going to, in markets that they've been to in the past where they truly know, okay, this fighter can put 100 people in the building. This fighter can put 200 people in the building. Those to me will be the fighters that ultimately get on those cards. But yeah, it's, I just think at the end of the day, it's as a, whether we're talking about Bellator, your PFL or anybody else, you just got to do things to get people interested. I mean, I just think that's what it comes down to is what ultimately is getting you to the television set.
Yes, that's it's as simple as that. And right now, when I look at what's getting me to the television set, it's Pitbull versus McKee. It's Conor versus Poirier. Those are the two big fights for either promotion that's getting me to the television set. And then you know what? I dig the PFL this season. I'm digging it. I'm watching every show. And I'm excited for the playoffs. And what I love about the intimate nature of this PFL broadcast is when you see the fighters who are also in the tournament watching the fights. You had Brandon Lawney in the crowd watching. And I think it's great. I think they've done a good job with their broadcast. Like what PFL has done really well about their broadcast is putting over their fighters and getting people to know them. They do really good features on them. Bellator does too, but I think PFL has done a good job. And I'm very much looking forward to that final championship night.
I would tell you, watching that promo during the 263 pay-per-view for McGregor, Poirier, I was like, I just wondered what was going through Dustin Poirier's mind as he's seeing that promo where literally he's like the afterthought in the promo.
Yeah, you could literally do a parody where it's like Conor McGregor is fighting on set. He just never mentioned the opponent. I mean, it'd be a similar amount of pay-per-view buys. This is a fight that I think people are excited about, but it's not like it's not the steamiest McGregor fight.
Are we at the point, is motivated Conor becoming motivated BJ Penn?
Totally, 100%. I mean, Dustin kicked his ass in that last fight. He's probably going to do it again unless he's unmotivated, which is a real possibility. Dude had no ambition to challenge for the title in the post-fight press conference.
But let's just say this. Like, if Dustin wins, what's it ultimately say about the UFC in 2021 that your biggest fight will involve, what, Conor, who at that point will have, what, lost 3 or 4? 4 or 5? Something like that? against Nate Diaz. Like I that to me, it just says a lot about where we're at right now. And I mean, like, look, I'm happy for Dustin, bro. Go get paid. Go rack up that money, because I can only imagine how much money he is going to make between the second fight and the third fight, just in terms of pay-per-views.
Yeah, it's the type of money that you can just put in your bank account and not worry about paying another bill the rest of your life. It's life-changing money. And it happened to a great dude. So, you know, kudos to him. But, yeah, I mean, win or lose or draw, I think Conor maintains the same level of name value. And it doesn't say anything we didn't already know. We already know it. So, you know, it's why the Paul brothers are such big draws. It's not because of their in-ring skills. But you're totally right. Win or lose or draw, Conor's still going to be cashing checks. He's still going to be part of the biggest UFC pay-per-view fights of the next few years.
By the way, I did not watch it, but, you know, they had that YouTube versus TikTokers event. Apparently, YouTubers are tougher than TikTokers.
I heard that. I also heard Lamar Odom beat up...
Bro. So the clip of the end of the fight is all over social media. And so I saw it, and Aaron Carter looked like a little kid in that.
Yes, all the way.
Like, there's one point where, like, Chuck Liddell is telling Eric Carter to stop, you know, stop turning around. It's just like, oh, man. And then, so, you know, you got the Anderson Silva boxing fight this weekend. So it's on Fight. And so I'm like, oh, let me click on the link. Let me just see how this pay-per-view is. It's a $40 pay-per-view.
Dude, that pay-per-view poster looks so depressing. I remember seeing them. Like, Anderson looks so old. Let's see. We have Anderson, right? And then Julio's dad is fighting on the card too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's insane. Yeah, yeah. This is he's in the damn. This card is depressing as hell. Oh, Josh Koscheck's on this card. So.
Oh, I did not even know that.
He's a part of the poster. Yeah, we have Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. versus Hector Camacho Jr. We have Anderson the Spider Silva versus Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. And Josh Koscheck is on the poster, but I don't know who he's fighting or if he's pulled out or if he was ever booked. But I'm pretty sure Josh Koscheck.
I don't think it's Josh Koscheck, bro. That's a dude who looks like a younger version of Josh Koscheck.
I'm starting to look more closely. I'm like,
because, yeah. Okay, I just pulled up on the fight.tv. It has the other guys, Omar Chavez versus Ramon Alvarez. Then he has three fights listed.
Dude, that guy kind of looks like Josh Koscheck, but you're right. But yeah, the guy's hair isn't as curly. I took a second look, and I'm like, yeah, damn, fake news.
Yeah,
that guy looks a lot like Josh Koscheck.
You know, of course, you know, Thrower lost their fight this week and because of COVID. But I'm sitting there going, man, no way I would spend $40 to watch this thing.
No,
like if it was on ESPN, would I turn it on, Daniel? Yeah, I would.
Totally.
I'm not paying $40 for this thing.
Yeah, we're waiting to see the video on Twitter, you know?
Oh, bro, you know there will be a clip on Twitter within like 30 seconds of something notable happening.
Yeah, but it might just be a decision. I don't know. Are they going to do headgear? Probably not. They probably won't do it.
You're asking the wrong person.
Yeah, like, we are experts. But that's depressing. Like, Anderson Silva is literally like the sixth best fighter of all time. And there was a point in time when he was probably the GOAT. You know, he's literally like a legend of MMA. And so is Chavez Sr., legend of boxing.
To me, it just goes to this whole of like what combat sports has become in 2021, of the type of events that are coming together that, you know, it's like. You look at these fights that you wish would have happened in their prime. You know, it's like, you know, my biggest beef with boxing is you just don't give me the fights I want to see. Mm-hmm. By the way, did you see Tyson Fury show up to the press conference with no shirt on?
I didn't see that. No.
And Deontay Wilder's wearing headphones the whole time.
That's awful.
Now, look, I will buy that pay-per-view.
Yeah, I'll buy that pay-per-view. You know, I'm excited to watch Teofimo Lopez. He's fighting this weekend.
No, it's off.
That fight got called off?
Teofimo was got out of COVID.
Oh, is that what you... I didn't hear you say that.
Yeah, he's got COVID.
Damn.
So that... It's,
you said it twice now, and you broke the news to me the second time.
Yeah, I want to say it's now going to be August 14th is when they're going to do that fight.
Damn.
Because I saw like his opponent put out a statement that basically talked about like, I'd been working my tail off for the last 13 weeks. I was all set to become a world champion on Saturday. And he mentioned about all things he's gone through throughout this training camp. And it's like, man, God, like the poor soul who had to make that phone call to let him know fights off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's but yeah, because I want to say Wilder Fury's the same night as Sanhagen Dillashaw.
That's bad for Sanhagen Dillashaw. Although I wish it would have been Fury versus Joshua.
But I'm guessing it probably means that UFC main card's probably over by 10 p.m. Eastern time.
That's true.
There's no reason to go up against that fight. No reason.
Yeah. It's not like it's a pay-per-view anyway. So it's just like
fighting you card. Even though it's still surprising, that's the type of fight they'd put on a fight night card as opposed to like a pay-per-view co-main event.
Yeah, I think so. But I also think, man, they were looking at the Gane Volkov main event and they were like, damn, we need to do a good one. You know?
Yeah, there's UFC card pretty much every week. So, hey, look, it's odd we don't have a card July 4th weekend. Not complaining.
I'm not complaining at all. Man. Man, by the way, Pacquiao versus Errol Spence, that's a fight I'll watch. And then, you know, there's a guy from the Valley who's doing really good. His name's Brandon Figueroa. And he's fighting Stephen Fulton, who apparently is a good boxer. But yeah, you know, we had a big week this past weekend, and we're kind of slowing things down until we pick back up the weekend after Independence Day weekend.
Bro, like when it comes to boxing, I'm so out of tune with what's going on in boxing. Unless it's like a major, like mega push fight, the odds of me knowing what's going on is unlikely. I'm just being honest.
Yeah, I'm a very casual fan, you know.
That is a way to describe me as a boxing fan. I'm a casual.
Yeah, what was that thing called back in the day when you would write letters to people in a different country? Pen pal? We can be like pen pals of the boxing podcast to give them opinions about casual fans of their sport and vice versa.
I will tell you this. I actually got hit up if I would host a boxing podcast, and I'm like, I'm not the right guy. I'm not the right guy for that.
No, I can do celebrity boxing, but
that's pretty much what boxing, major boxing is at this point.
That's a good point. The analysis you're giving on Aaron Carter is going to be similar to a normal boxing. You know, this guy sucks. Yeah,
it's crazy. But we'll be back next week. We'll take a look back at what happened this week in May. We'll get you ready for next week's UFC. Of course, be sure to check out our presenting sponsor, HelloFresh. Go to HelloFresh.com/MMAReport12 and use that code MMAReport12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping. So be sure to check out that. I'll be having a HelloFresh meal later on this week. And of course, that is going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which you can listen to on your favorite podcasting platform and radioinfluence.com.